Blue 20!
It's Intentional Grounding. Chicago's best Bears breakdown and analysis.
Ice up, son.
Now, they are WGN Radio's very own Adam Hogue and the Chicago Sun-Times Adam Johns.
Welcome into episode 21 of Intentional Grounding. Back in the basement again this week. I don't have the Christmas lights on, though.
There's no Christmas spirit here.
There's no Christmas spirit, really, when it comes to the Chicago Bears. They lose their third game in a row, and it's been a rough December. The last time...
very rough December. It's putting getting some coal in their stockings, that's for sure.
Last time the Bears won a game in December was December 15th, 2013. That famous game in Cleveland when Jay Cutler earned his enormous contract.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, the Bears have lost every single game they've played in the month of December the last 2 years.
Was Jason Campbell starting for the Browns that game?
I believe he was.
It was a cold night. Cold day, I remember that one.
It was cold.
People's beards.
I believe, wasn't there some drama before the game from Jay Glazer citing a former Bears player that said they should keep McCown? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of former players love them some Josh McCown. Yeah, you know, all the credit to the world for Josh McCown. I mean, he got paid after that year.
Oh, yeah. Mark Trestman got that man paid.
Oh, yeah.
This is episode 21 of Intentional Grounding. Adam Hogue, Adam Johns. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. We're on WGNRadio.com/Bears and ChicagoSunTimes.com. Find the podcast by searching Intentional Grounding on iTunes if you want to subscribe there. Rate the podcast. Review it if you like it. We appreciate you doing that. And we're on SoundCloud at SoundCloud.com/WGNRadioSports. Our producer is Mike Jacobson. Before we dive into the ugly game in Minnesota on Sunday, I want to clear up something because, you know, look, all the attention is turned towards April and the NFL draft. I get it, and it's partly why I for the last month or so, have been trying to tweet out the Bears draft pick, projected draft pick, every single week.
That fluctuates.
But there is a discrepancy today regarding tiebreakers, and I want to explain this because if you woke up today and you checked the Bears draft order, or just the NFL draft order in general. CBSSports.com keeps track of this. NFL.com keeps track of it. And they both have the Bears picking 10th with the Lions 11th. I have it reversed. And here's why. The tiebreaker, this really isn't all that complicated. I'll try to make it as simple as possible. But the draft order is determined by record, first and foremost, obviously. The first tiebreaker, which probably 99% of the time does create the tiebreaker, is strength of schedule, which all that is the winning percentage of your 13 opponents. Okay? If you have a higher winning percentage, then you actually get the worst pick because theoretically the team that had the easier schedule and had that same bad record is technically determined to be a worse team. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they do it that way. If you were to just look at the 14 games played so far, not the entire schedule, the Bears and Lions have an identical strength of schedule at 561. That's rare, but I guess in a division, that's probably where that could actually happen because you play 11 of your 13 opponents are the same. So that's what NFL.com did. That's what CBSSports.com did. They have the same strength of schedule. So the next tiebreaker is divisional record. The Lions have a better divisional record. So that's why they put the Lions 11th and the Bears 10th. I like to look at the entire schedule because that's how it gets done at the end of the year. And especially when you're comparing two teams in the same division, like I said, 11 of their 13 opponents are the exact same. The only difference is that the Lions play the Eagles and the Saints, which have a combined record of 11-17. And the Bears played Washington and the Buccaneers. They haven't played the Bucs yet, but they will. Those two teams have a record of 13-15. That's a better record. Pretty simple to look at it that way. Say the Bears have the harder schedule.
Mm-hmm.
When it's all said and done, that's probably how it's going to be. That's why I give the tiebreaker to the Lions. to the Lions at number 10 and the Bears at number 11. It doesn't really matter. But
I mean, 10 and 11.
It's right there.
I think both teams have different needs.
But wouldn't you like to be right ahead of your divisional opponent instead of the other way around?
Oh, when you get in terms of, there's a lot of gamesmanship that goes on.
Like when the Rams drafted Aaron Donald one pick ahead of.
It's a good point because no one thought they were going to pick Aaron Donald. If you look at that one, because everyone thought Aaron Donald was following right to him, you know, or right to the Bears, which would have been. I mean, Aaron Donald's a superstar already in my book, but that's a good point. But I mean, you don't have to worry about the Lions picking a quarterback. You would think.
Probably not.
Already paid Stafford. He's having he's rebounded quite nicely from an individual standpoint, I would say.
So, based on that comment you just made, you're not ruling out quarterback in the first round.
No, I'm not ruling out anything.
I don't think you
can't.
Should.
No.
Did what I just explained make any sense at all?
It's a lot of numbers. It did.
Basically, if you take into account the whole schedule, the Bears have the harder schedule than the Lions. So the tiebreaker goes to the Lions. If you don't account for the last 2 weeks, they're actually equal.
Who do you think wins week 17?
And I'm glad you brought that up, because this doesn't matter, because there's two games to go, and they play each other in week 17. That's probably going to be what decides the tiebreaker, if there is one between the two teams. Who wins that game?
The Lions are going to be favored.
The
Lions are playing better.
Lions are playing much better right now.
Yeah.
We could do a whole podcast on what the Lions should do this offseason. Mm-hmm. I actually think they should maybe keep Jim Caldwell.
Really?
I don't know that they will.
No way. The new GM is going to come in there and pick his guy.
Probably, but I'm talking about what they should do. Caldwell brought this team to the playoffs immediately.
Yeah.
After all the
Jim
nonsense.
Caldwell's an overrated coach. Come on.
Well, I don't think he's an elite coach by any means.
No. I mean, this is a guy who, I mean, what, his best year ever when he won coach of the year, what, how many years ago? Because Peyton Manning was exceptional?
Yeah, and then they were bad.
I mean, Matthew Stafford had a good year last year. He still had Sue. Defense was good last year.
If I'm a Bears fan, though, I'm watching the Lions situation very closely, because that could be
Adam
the most
Gase.
Likely of destinations for Adam Gase.
Mm-hmm. Got connections there. He's from Michigan. Got his coaching start there. I mean, obvious connections. I mean, Ernie Accorsi, isn't he advising the Lions right now?
He is.
So, I mean.
Which, by the way, is that's an interesting dynamic, because he just came in and advised the Bears last year.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's advising a team within the same division. Now, that's what these guys get paid to do. I'm not saying there's any kind of conflict of interest or anything like that, but it does.
I mean, you would safely assume that Chris Ballard and Brian Gain are probably the two leading candidates already, based on what Ernie Accorsi did with the Bears last year.
Probably. Now, they did give Chris Ballard of a promotion.
But not the general manager.
No. So that. By the way, I saw Chris Ballard at Northwestern Penn State game this year.
Yeah?
He was there in person, scouting Christian Hackenberg.
Talk about a team who's rebounded, though.
As was Ryan Pace.
Alex Smith. The Chiefs back in the playoff mix.
All right, so maybe we can talk a little bit about the coaching scenarios, too, because it almost seems futile to be talking about these games at this point. So we'll go through these games quickly, not spend all the time on it, but like, that was a disaster in Minnesota on Sunday. I was having dinner with some family on Saturday night. I have family lives up there. Of course, they're Vikings fans. And I said, look, I have no idea who's going to win the game. It wouldn't surprise me.
Blowing that horn.
Sid Hartman blowing the horn.
Yeah, yeah.
Legendary Minnesota columnist blowing the horn. It had Potsy all worked up.
Yeah.
There's our Potsy reference for the week.
Yeah, I went to school at St. Norbert's, which is right outside Green Bay. Look, I'm a Chicago kid. A lot of kids go to that school. I just want to clarify that. But at that time, the Vikings were the biggest rival for the Packers, right? The Bears were bad. In my 4 years there, the Packers lost to the Bears once. That's how bad that rivalry was in those 4 years. It was the Vikings and Dante Culpepper and Randy Moss. Remember that celebration they used to do? You know, where he'd be like rolling his arms, Dante Culpepper. Those Packers fans hated it. But it's a happy memory for me, because I'm one of my roommates, every time Paul Culpepper would bust that out, he'd throw something at the television. Always fun.
By the way, those were some good days, just in terms of watching the Vikings.
Culpepper would just throw it up.
Like, those were fun times. And Randy Moss on the Vikings, even when Chris Carter was there.
Yeah.
Those were the vintage Vikings days. Look, so I'm having dinner with my family, and I'm saying they're Vikings fans. I'm saying I don't know who's going to win. I'm pretty sure, though, the game's going to be close. Mm-hmm. This is what the Bears have done all season, and I think we said this on the podcast last week. It's going to be close. It'll be a toss-up. They'll have a chance to win. Who knows if they will. And ultimately, I did pick the Vikings to win the game. But I basically told my cousin there's no chance the Bears get blown out. And that's basically what happened.
I think I wrote that. They've kept games close every year. You know what I actually thought is we're getting ready for kickoff maybe an hour before, sitting in a nice press box there at TCF Bank Stadium. I'm starting to think, you know what? Vikings haven't played that well. They're missing three key defensive players. You know, Bears have been pretty good on the road. Maybe. Maybe the Bears could surprise us all and rebound after those two wins, but boy, did that get away from them quickly.
Yeah, and it brings up some major questions, big picture questions that we'll discuss in a little bit. But keeping it focused on this game, usually we start with our player of the game, but I think after a game like that, you have to go the opposite. You can't start with the positive. You have to go negative.
Worst player on the field.
I'm sorry. It might be time for an intervention, Adam.
You know what? You don't have to say it because I think I agree with you. You know, he's concussed now.
I'll let you say it then.
You know, Shay McClellan had a bad day.
Okay.
A really, really bad day.
You know,
missed tackles again.
The first step is to admit it.
Yeah. You know, like some of these, the coverage things, I don't think he's as bad as like Pro Football Focus always goes harder than Shay McClellan in coverage, and some of it's not exactly right. But his missed your starting inside linebacker cannot miss tackles like he has the past couple weeks.
I don't know what's happened because I was with you for the first half of the season. This guy was playing well when he was out with his knee injury. They missed him. I still believe that was the case. But in the last few weeks, I don't know. He's obviously not 100%. However,
yeah,
I think what most of it is other teams have scouted him. They figured out his weaknesses. They've realized that they can create matchups to put him in coverage, and it's not a good situation for him. The missed tackles are weird, though.
Yeah.
Because he was...
That's the biggest indictment. I mean, the coverage thing is... I'm okay with some of it, you know, because, look, running backs and receivers and tight ends are supposed to have matchup advantages over linebackers. And for the most part, he wasn't atrocious. It's the... Again, your starting inside linebacker has to be your surest tackler on the field.
Yeah, and I that's the weird part for me is because he was a sure tackler earlier in the season.
Yeah.
He was coming downhill, filling the gap. In the last few weeks, it's been a problem throughout the entire defense, not just Shay McClellan, but he's been a big part of it. I said this yesterday on the radio. I think it's time to move on from this guy. I just, as much as they've talked him up and Vic Fangio says he likes him, the only scenario I see him back is if it's, you know, basically not much of a market for him out there at all, which I'm not sure there will be, and Vic really does like him and wants to give him a chance to compete for his job again. I don't think he's handed his same job next year.
No, he's going to have to earn it. I think he comes back because Vic Fangio, it's not an infatuation. I mean, he really loves the guy and sees a lot of potential there. And I mean, he hasn't wavered in his comments. And if there's anybody who's been critical of players, you know, practice efforts or game efforts or just in general play, it's been Vic Fangio. He hasn't hid his criticism of players' mistakes and flaws. He hasn't wavered on his level of whether it's happiness or just what the potential he sees in Shay McClellan. So I think that alone brings him back. McClellan's always struck me as a guy that, you know, they'll say they walk away from him, goes to the Patriots, becomes maybe not a Pro Bowl player, but an impactful player because that's what organizations like that do. And the Patriots, they had a high draft grade on him 4 years ago coming out of Boise State.
That's interesting. I guess I wouldn't rule it out. It's been 4 years, and he's yet to put a full season of
You can't even count the first two, though. Can you?
It still happened. I agree that he was out of place, but those were worse than this. I don't know. You can't go 4 years in the league and not have I guess you would call this a decent season, but it's really gone downhill the last few weeks to the point where my overall grade for him right now in the year, after this performance, he's now in the red.
Yeah, I mean, you could say his struggles have embodied the, I think, the overall struggles of the defense, because the defense has really tailspin the past.
And I think
that
sort of validates what we were saying earlier in the year, that he was important, that he was playing pretty well. I totally agree with you there. His struggles certainly coincide with the struggles of the entire unit lately. I guess if you're looking for a positive, though,
player of the game.
The guy playing next to him, John Timu, was pretty good.
Yeah.
He was finding ways into the backfield, stopping the run. Actually, overall, and John Fox brought this up yesterday at Al Saul, I think it was a fair point, the run defense was solid.
Yeah. And a lot of that was Timu. I mean, you watch the film. Every one of his tackles but one was within 3 yards. I mean, his best tackle to me, and I wrote about this in the Sun Times, wasn't the 3 yard tackle for loss he had on Peterson, because that was like a broken down play. But, I mean, there was a play where Peterson gained the edge. You know, he got outside. You know, when Peterson gets out there, it's devastating for defenses. And Timu, I mean, he maneuvered through traffic expertly. I mean, his instinct showed up on that play. And then he made a strong, sound tackle on the best running back going in the game, and you know, has been for years. But really stood out to me in that play.
We'll see if he keeps it up. I'm not ready to get.
He was only in base defense. He wasn't in pass coverage a lot.
Exactly.
And, that's
and look, Jonathan Anderson looked pretty good when he got out there for the first time this year.
Christian Jones, people were high on.
Christian Jones has shown flashes. Look, it's all about. It's really no different than baseball, which is, you know, rookie comes in, plays well, then the pitchers adjust. And then it's all about adjusting back. Who can make the second adjustment? And that's going to happen. Like I said, I think with Shane McClellan, I think opposing offenses have been able to figure him out and find his weaknesses and exploit them. So John Timu played good. He deserves credit for it. I'm not excited. I'm not to the point to saying, hey, this guy needs to be starting next year. But maybe he's certainly going to be here in the offseason, and he'll get a chance to go through training camp in the offseason program and earn a job.
I think he's earned more playing time. I want to see him in nickel situations, you know, because my player of the game was the guy who burnt the Bears in nickel situations. You know, Stephon Diggs was exceptional, but Teddy Bridgewater, for how critical we've been on him on this podcast, I want to give him a nice pat in the back because, look, I know he didn't go downfield a lot. I think that touchdown pass he had Diggs in the back of the end zone was an exceptional throw. But they had a great game plan for him against the Bears defense. Talk about finding the mismatches and weaknesses. That's what the Vikings did. And Teddy Bridgewater looked composed back there. And he took what the Bears defense gave him, and they made him pay for it.
Yeah, we need to point out that Norv Turner out-schemed Vic Fangio. And Fangio doesn't have a whole lot of help right now, but they had a game plan. The Bears had no answer. And even on the other side of the ball, you could say the same thing happened to Adam Gase. So a lot of it wasn't good player execution. A lot of the players didn't execute, but I thought the coaches got out-coached, too, pretty thoroughly. And Mike Zimmer's a good head coach. I loved that hire when they made it, and I think it's working out in their favor. But that plays into some of the bigger picture stuff that we'll get into. As we stay focused on this game, though, let's ask two questions. I think at this point we need to play these back-to-back because they pretty much go together.
Biggest answer.
And right away.
Biggest concern.
This is not a great football team. And that's both the biggest answer I got out of this game, last few games, and also the biggest concern going forward. We kind of knew that going into this year, but this had been a successful year when they leave Green Bay with a victory and things are going the right way. Just the fact that they were legitimately in playoff contention after that game on Thanksgiving night, no one really thought that was going to be the case. The last 3 weeks have been disastrous. I mean, you lost at home to a horrendous 49ers team. Got torn up by Blaine Gabbert late in the game. And then, okay, Washington's okay, but you're at home. You were favored. Wasn't a pretty game, especially in the first half. And then you go to Minnesota again, a divisional opponent, and lose. They're not beating divisional opponents. They're not winning their home games. It's a bad recipe for success. So I think it's, and I just mentioned the coach is getting out coached. I think it's very fair at this point to look at this entire big picture and say, okay, yeah, the Bears are probably ahead of the clown show that was here last year, but how much ahead? How much better have they really gotten?
They still got to win football games. I mean, yeah. They still have the same exact record at this time as Mark Trestman had last year, and last year at this point was a complete disaster. Last year at this point, we were talking about starting Jay Cutler, or starting Jimmy Clausen over Jay Cutler. Wasn't it week 16?
Yeah,
last year?
Yeah, he played week 16 and then got hurt.
Then got
so
hurt.
Cutler came back week 7.
The Lions. So, I mean, so yes, the culture has improved, but the win total hasn't. And these past three losses, losing to Blaine Gabbert, Kirk Cousins, and Teddy Bridgewater, who we just mentioned, not exactly the elite quarterbacks here. I mean, sometimes these guys are awful. And look what's happened to the Bears. To me, what's to sort of build on your point, and just from watching the film, I kept, you know, making notes of this. The Bears are a slow team, and this goes to your point of being, you know, maybe not a bad team, but this is a talent issue. And just watching whether it was, you know, Diggs or Jerick McKinnon just break free and, you know, make plays. Like, you're wondering, you're watching the Bears do this thing. Yes, Jeremy Langford could be electric. Matt Forte had a one-run call back, you know. But just from a defensive standpoint, you know, like, I keep talking about playmakers and game changers, but they're being left behind. You know, I mean, teams are noticeably faster and quicker than the Bears. And, you know, I know Ryan Pace mentioned that's an area he wanted to improve a while ago. And for a long time, I think the Bears have been able to hide that deficiency. But you're right. There's a lot of film on what the Bears can do now. And the teams are beating them with speed.
Yeah, no, I think that gets right to the heart of the issue. And honestly, you know, you talk to these guys off the record, they'll tell you that they need playmakers. Like that, and it's not breaking news. I mean, right now they have guys that make the tackle, make the easy plays, although that's been an issue lately too. They don't have playmakers.
Yeah.
They don't have top-end speed. They don't have the guys that can make the wow plays.
Yeah.
Maybe the one guy on offense they had to do that, Alshon Jeffrey, has been hurt all year.
Yeah.
So there's been they have 11 takeaways this year.
Yeah.
11. That's awful.
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
I mean, don't get me wrong. You don't have to be the fastest guy in the field to be a playmaker. There's some savviness to it, too, you know, or just having the instincts for it.
Yeah.
Just look at Charles Tillman. First game back, I mean, he was dealing with an injury, comes back against the Panthers for the Panthers this week. He has an interception and a forced fumble, and I think he recovered it as well. I mean, just the innate ability to make plays like that. And you look at this Bears team, and you're just not, even on both sides of the field, you know, the ability to make the big play. I mean, Blaine Gabbert is running 44 yards down the middle of the field, you know, throwing 71-yard bombs to Torrey Smith. Where's the offensive fireworks from the Bears offense with maybe arguably better players?
Yeah, it's not there. I mean, they have, and that gets them the biggest concern part of this conversation. I think that they can and will be in contention next year for a playoff spot. I think that when you kind of look at where they were earlier in the year, despite tough schedule's going to be easier next year, by the way, theoretically. I mean, they play the NFC East, the NFC South, the two worst divisions right now. Now, teams change, they get better, so that could...
And the Cowboys are going to be better.
That could change. However, you know, you look at the home schedule, it's like Jacksonville and Tennessee. I mean, there's going to be a lot of winnable games. So it should be better. But let's say even they make the playoffs next year. This is not going to be a team that you're going into the playoffs saying Super Bowl. I think the question is, how many years are they still away from being a legitimate Super Bowl contender? And I would say they're still at least two or three.
Yeah. A couple good off seasons away. I mean, even look at this rookie class. Talk about a rookie wall. I mean, Adrian Amos, Eddie Goldman. Did you notice Eddie Goldman in Minnesota at all?
I think I had him down for one play. Otherwise, he was pretty invisible.
And Jeremy Langford, he flashed.
Langford had a pretty bad game, actually, I thought.
Bad holding.
Yeah, the carry distribution confused me when I looked at the box score, especially when I went back and watched the tape. Matt Forte looked good throughout the game, I thought. Langford didn't. And yet Langford had three more carries than Matt Forte did.
I think some of that situation, like Forte bust that, what was it, 35-yard run, right? Gets called back because of your favorite guy, Hieronymus Christou's holding penalty. And then immediately Jeremy Langford's back out in the field because, you know, Forte's a bit spent on that. So maybe he stole a couple carries from Forte on his possession. But I get what you're saying. It's clear that they're not trying. Well, it's 2 weeks in a row, though, of that, I believe, right? Where Jeremy Langford's got more carries and touches than Matt Forte.
I mean, the writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
It doesn't look great for Matt Forte returning, but that's sort of what I'm getting at. I don't know that you're upgrading.
No.
You might be okay. I mean, you might be okay with Langford and Carey, but
you're talking about
playmakers. I would say Matt Forte is much more of a playmaker at this point.
And here's the thing about Carey. Yes, people were high on him a couple weeks ago, you know, because of what he did against, was in Navarro Bowman. He kind of ran through for the touchdown. But this is a guy who nearly didn't make the team. You know, he needed Sonoris Perry to bust up his foot to be, you know, guaranteed a roster spot. This was a guy who was inactive, was behind Forte, behind Jeremy Langford, and behind a Jaquizz Rodgers.
I think there's extenuating circumstances there, though. I think one of those is, and I think Adam Gase said this either last week or 2 weeks ago, they didn't know a whole lot about him because he never played. I mean, he never got on the field last year as a rookie. Mark Trestman never took Matt Forte off the field, so it's hard to know what he was like. Yeah. And I think he actually did impress them in the preseason. But he's also not a great – or he's improved the special teams. But at that
significantly,
point,
you should give him credit for that.
At that point, he
really good.
Couldn't even be put on the field as a special teamer. So that held him back too. And I always thought – I remember thinking in August, if this guy doesn't make the Bears, he's going to end up on another roster and end up getting significant carries. So I think he's an okay player. Here's my worry about Kadeem Carey. I think he can definitely be your number two next year. If it's Langford Carey, I think that's okay once you punch. I just don't know that you're upgrading over Matt Forte. My worry with him is, yes, you give him credit for his running style and for running as hard as he does. He's already knocked himself out once this year, though. And he needs to be careful about that. You want to talk about longevity and how Matt Forte takes care of his body.
Yeah.
I don't know that Kadeem Carey's running style is conducive to having a long career.
No, he's not. He's a thick guy, but not exactly big, and he kind of run. He wants to run like a bulldozer, you know.
Yeah, and that's gonna catch up to you eventually.
Well, I mean, these guys are massive nowadays on defense.
Yeah. So anyway, that's with the running backs. There's so many. They need so many players, they really do, and I think the way they set up competitions this year helped create some wins earlier in the season, but I don't know that it's conducive to winning a Super Bowl anytime soon. They got a lot of work to do. All right, let's move on. What does the Fox say?
I don't really recall the end of the first half.
No kidding. What the fuck, say? So let's talk about the end of the first half.
Yeah, that was my question he was answering. I asked him about why he held on to all his timeouts.
All three of them.
At the end of the first half in Minneapolis. He continued to say, I think this is what struck me, is if he said the word resistance, as if the Bears would have shown more resistance to the Vikings, maybe held them to field goal, kept them in field goal range, that he would have considered using his field goals to give his offense more time. But I don't know. But even in then, I mean, the way the Vikings are moving the ball so fast and getting, you know, yards and chunks, why not?
Well, all right. So, and I want to make sure I get this right. So I got the play-by-play in front of me. But they had a 3rd and 7. They had the Vikings in a 3rd and 7 situation.
What yard line?
With 33 seconds to go. They're at the 17 with 33 seconds to go. So this is already after.
You're wondering why you should have used them before that.
Probably. I'm sorry. Remember the first third. Okay, let's go. All right, let's start over. 2 minute warning. This is the middle of their drive. Okay, at the 2 minute warning, the Vikings are at the 20 yard line. Okay, so it's 2 minutes ago. Vikings are already at the 20. And Jarvis Jenkins stops Jerick McKinnon in the backfield for a loss of one. Okay, so you got him in behind the chains already. A lot of coaches out there would call timeout to get the ball back. Instead, John Fox doesn't. Clock runs down to 121. Bridgewater, short pass to McKinnon for 4 yards. So now it's third and seven. At the end of that play, there's what? 110 left?
Yeah.
Third and seven with like 110 left in the half. That's where I think everyone had a problem with him not calling his timeout. And based on what you just said and what John Fox's answer was to your question, he didn't trust his defense.
No.
So right there, that tells you a lot, that he didn't trust his defense to even get a stop. And by the way, this was a huge play in the game. Bridgewater gets sacked by Lamar Houston on this play. Third and seven. But there are two penalties. One of them being Lamar Houston being offsides.
It's a theme.
Bad to be offsides. I went back and looked at it, though. I'm not sure he was offsides. If you watch the play very closely and slow it down, it's very close. It kind of looks like he just did a good job of jumping the snap.
Yeah.
It was not an obvious offsides. And I think Lamar Houston kind of argued his case there a little bit. So I wouldn't say it was an egregious call, but it was a big call in the game.
Yeah.
Because on the very next play, he hits McKinnon for a 17-yard touchdown, which nobody tackled him at all. So the huge sequence in the game, you had an opportunity to get a stop there with about a minute left on the clock using your timeout. Instead, you let the clock run out, and they end up scoring anyway.
Yeah. Not good. Well, I mean, Fox, what did he say? Didn't think it was a big part of the game?
I take exception to that, too, because the Bears got the ball back with 26 seconds to go, and they managed to get all the way to midfield. And I mean, they didn't even take a shot at the end zone. That whole sequence was bizarre because they weren't even able to get a shot to the end zone there, a Hail
Vikings
Mary.
Getting the ball to start the second half, too.
I mean, they did go for a Hail Mary, but it was way short because they weren't close enough. And then the Vikings get the ball back to start the second half, but they do the onside kick.
And it's, I don't know if you're planning to have a successful onside kick. You can't plan for that.
Right.
My
exception to what John Fox said is he didn't think it was a big factor in the game. I would argue that the way the first half ended and then the way the second half started was the entire game. Because, again, let's look at what the score would have been. It was 10-7, right?
Yep.
You hold the Vikings to a field goal. It's 13-7. You're getting the ball back with a lot of time to maybe go down and get a field goal, too. Now, you don't know if that's going to happen, but instead, it's 17-7 after they get the touchdown. You don't even get a realistic chance to put more points on the board. And then you end up getting the onside kick, but Kyle Long can't hold his block. Cutler fumbles and turns it over. The Vikings end up scoring again, and now it's 24-7. Yeah. The game's essentially over.
Even just to take a timeout, just to make sure, well, one, you got the right personnel on the field. Two, that everybody's got their breath because the Vikings were taking it to them. And just to have everybody in order, did you notice this throughout the game that a lot of times they were late getting their coverage assignments, that there was a lot of pointing around, you know, like Shea McClellan's yelling at guys to get here, get there, and whether it's up front or his fellow linebacker or just behind him and getting the dime nickel Allen ball in the right place, there seemed to be a lot of, you hear it all the time, miscommunications, but you're starting to see it like all the time now where the call comes in almost late. They're pointing at certain guys. It happens almost every single game at several times where it turns out to really hurt them.
There was one play where Jonathan Anderson came in on nickel, was completely lost before the play. McClellan's trying to yell at him, so he runs from right to left. I forget if it was Diggs or Mike Wallace who ran a crossing route right at him. Because he's running the opposite way, he kind of has an oh crap moment, realizes he's supposed to be following him, turns around, he's already completely beat. That ended up being like a 30-yard gain. After what happened last week against Washington, that's completely inexcusable by Jonathan Anderson.
Yeah.
And he, we talked about this. He took responsibility for how he played, said it needed to get better, and it just wasn't. So the Bears have a pretty big inside linebacker problem. That much is pretty obvious. All right, let's move on and discuss this game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's the Lovie Smith Bowl.
Part two.
For him, he's facing an entirely different coaching staff. The Bears were able to beat the Bucs last year at Soldier Field. And this is an interesting matchup because the Bucs are better, and I don't know that the Bears are much better.
I think the Bears, who came through with the turnovers last year against the Buccaneers, right? Josh McCown was picked off. He was a sack strip, right?
Yeah.
And he threw an interception.
He was pretty bad.
Yeah. I'm just trying to remember how it played out.
I don't remember who picked him off.
It was still kind of a close game. Was it 21-13 or something like that? But yes, I think Lovie may have the advantage this year, just in terms of, you know, he's got James Winston, who has shown flashes at times. His defense has been, I don't know how much better. I thought they would be a lot better than they are now, but I thought for sure the Bears would win last year. This year, I'm kind of leaning towards the Bucs.
Bold predictions.
I'll let you start.
I think Jameis Winston. I don't know how bold this is, considering what Blaine Gabbert has done, what Kirk Cousins has done, what Teddy Bridgewater did. He's going to have a pass rating over 140.
Wow. By the way, must have gotten your Bridgewater one, right? Because you said last week, I think you said he'd be above 120.
I did.
He blew that out of the water, wasn't he?
Even if you look at his
154.4, he was nearly perfect.
I think his three incompletions were maybe two drops, maybe, and one didn't permit like feet, dropped a bat down a pass.
Yes.
So
he was almost perfect.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a similar game plan that Lovie Smith's Buccaneers and Jameis Winston employ, and, you know, you could say, you know, obviously it worked against the Bears, and it's a perfect game plan for a rookie quarterback who I think will be a better quarterback overall than Teddy Bridgewater has. I think the potential is there, but yes, that is a trend that is going to continue, and it may not be so bold considering that trend, but for a rookie quarterback to have a pass rating over 140, I think that's bold enough for this week.
I think he throws for four touchdowns again.
Four?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess that would be in line with my.
and this goes against what I've been saying about Jameis Winston for a couple of years now. I think he's exceeded my expectations a little bit this year, but I'm still not completely sold on him. I think he has some issues. I just don't think he's going to have many issues against this Bears defense right now.
I mean, if you watch him sometimes, he could really put some spin on that ball, man.
Yeah.
And the way.
But he also has, and this goes back to college, one of the reasons why I have my doubts about him, he makes some mind-blowing bad decisions sometimes.
Well, Teddy Bridgewater does too.
Yeah.
Or he has.
Well, and that's why I think in this game, I think Jameis Winston's going to look pretty good.
Yeah. I think there's enough tape on this Bears defense. Look, they can be so technically sound, but I think the mismatches in personnel, teams have found it. You know what I mean? Like, they're there, and it's pretty evident to teams that, you know, through the middle of the Bears defense is a weak point. I mean, look at all those crossing routes the Vikings ran.
And they're going to keep doing it. The Bears don't have any way to stop it. All right, so you got Jameis Winston with a QB rating over, a passer rating over 140.
Yep.
And I have him throwing four touchdowns. So I think we know where our game predictions are going.
Predictions.
I got Bucs 27-20.
I got the Bucs to 31-20. How about that?
A little bit more.
What's the line right now? I don't even know.
It's like 2.5 or something. 3.5? Not a lot.
I think they cover that.
Yeah.
I just.
Lovie's going to have his team. I mean, I think they disappointed him last year. I know he's got some new players, but.
He's at home.
He's out. Yeah. this is feeding right into Lovie Smith. It's going to be like 86 degrees on game day. I mean, that's what the predictions are.
I don't have a problem with that, by the way.
No, no. I'm going to have to bring your shorts. Be like a baseball writer.
Wow. Sideswiping baseball writers. I think I wear shorts sometimes in the preseason.
The games?
I think
training camp's one thing. You gotta wear pants.
I think I wore shorts at the final preseason game this year.
Okay.
Because Bob LeGear from the Daily Herald.
He's dressing like he's going golfing afterwards.
Right, right. And I shouldn't... so I shouldn't use that as an example, but I did because I think he wore shorts in Indianapolis. And then... So maybe the following... Well, that would have been Cincinnati or whatever it was. Then I wore shorts... And then he didn't.
Yeah.
So I call him out on it. I said, come on. I thought you could at least. Moon's got his shorts on all the time.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
December. He's wearing shorts.
You know the best dressed sports writers? Hockey guys. Suits.
Oh, yeah.
Always ties.
I think the NBA, they roll like that, too.
That dapper?
I don't know if they go full suit. But, yeah, they're the.
I mean, baseball's the worst.
I was watching the Bulls game last night. CSN's. Vincent Goodwill at the tie.
Well, he's
got to
do TV hits. If you're on TV, you got to dress for success.
JD does wear suits every week.
Yeah, he does.
Because he's got to be on TV. All right, we should get to some Twitter questions as I pull this up. I should have had it ready. We should have a ton today of Twitter questions. Hang on.
Where's the Jeopardy noise?
Yeah, I don't have that one. But we can build this suspense. Do you guys think Pace and Fox are sold on Jay Cutler as their quarterback for the next few years? He's still only 32.
Few years? I mean, I think that's the key word in the question. Few, right? That implies three, right?
I feel pretty safe in saying he's the quarterback, starting quarterback week one next year.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Unless he gets hurt.
You know, maybe even, but a few years, look, I don't know. I think they're going to consider drafting a quarterback this year. I think, Jay Cutler deserves a lot of credit for getting his turnover rate down, but he deserves a lot of credit for making plays on the fly, which has been some of the Bears' best plays this year. But I don't know. You just look at some of the quarterback play around the league, like Kirk Cousins putting up good numbers. Blake Bortles has over 30 touchdown passes. I know Jay Cutler has a lot of yards, but you need more scores. The struggles in the red zone aren't good, and some of that is on him as the quarterback. So... I don't know if they can upgrade that position this year again in the offseason. I think the quarterback issues and quarterback in college play are pretty well known right now. But, I don't know. But next year, yeah, he's here.
I think an ideal scenario is you find your quarterback and you don't force it. Only if Pace likes it. If Pace... And we know he's done his homework this year. He's gone out. He's seen Jared Goff. He's seen Connor Cook. He's seen Christian Hackenberg. Those guys have some flaws. I think Goff's clearly the best. You're probably not going to get that guy. But if for some reason he slips and he's the guy you're in love with and you're picking 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere around there, and you love him, I have no problem making that move. I have no problem looking at Christian Hackenberg in the third round. If you think you can develop him, bring him in. Whoever it is, whether it's Goff or more of a project like Hackenberg, I am a firm believer in letting these guys develop mm-hmm. and not being thrown out there as starters right away. I don't care how good they are. Maybe the only exceptions ever are, maybe not ever, but at least recent time, is Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. But yeah. Guess what? Both of those guys struggled as rookies.
Yeah.
People forget that. So,
Andrew Luck struggled this year before he got hurt.
Yeah, so I getting back to an ideal scenario, you find your quarterback this year in the draft, no matter what round it is, the guy you think you can develop, and you put him behind Jay Cutler for 2 years.
Yeah, there's this argument is, you can't do any better. I think, but you got to at least try, right? I mean, you get this idea is he's just the best that you're stuck with because he's just the best for you right now. No, I don't know if that's the right way. Look at it. They may have worked for this year. And look, I think Jay Cutler deserves a lot of credit for what he's done this year. I think he deserves to be back here next year. But I think Ryan Pace and John Fox have to look at the bigger picture of things and find out if they could maybe take a risk and find somebody better. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, Sam Bradford could be a free agent after this year. He clearly, whatever Chip Kelly runs may not be for him. I mean, is Sam like Bradford Sam. A better option than Jay Cutler?
No.
He was a number one overall pick.
No.
Why not?
Because he sucks.
And Jay Cutler's an all-pro, perennial all-pro player?
He's been pretty good this year.
With getting his turnovers down.
He's
been their best player.
I think Jay Cutler has been much better than Sam Bradford.
I'm not denying that. But Sam Bradford's also playing for, you know, in an offense where...
How about new?
Yeah, I'm good.
Adam's got the advantage with the iPad soundboard here that he could use all these sounds. But I'm just saying, you know, you can't just because he's the best you have right now doesn't mean you can't find any better.
All right, let's wrap it. Let's kind of go through this rapid-fire style. Because we got a lot of good questions, so let's do this quickly. Could you see Pace moving down to get more picks?
Well, that's always on the table, right? But
it is always on the table, but it's also very hard to get the value.
Yeah,
I tell you, most
they get 9 picks. I mean, it's kind of a lot of picks.
A lot of them are late, though. Yeah. But yes, they do have a lot of picks. Hypothetical: Vic Fangio gets a promotion somewhere. Does Ryan Pace mandate John Fox bring in another 3-4 coach? In other words, if Vic Fangio moves on for some reason.
For a head coaching job.
Do the Bears stick with 3-4 no matter what, or are they open to changing if they find the right
I think
coordinator?
John Fox said at the owners' meetings, it seems like forever ago, but in March, that he likes 3-4 because you could hide your pass rush a bit better, so... I think, yes, he does. He continues the 3-4.
Those last two questions were from Tommy Dobbs. Moving on to Daryl Conrad on Twitter. What do the Bears do with Kyle Long moving forward? Your gut feeling, is he a tackle or a guard next year?
Tackle.
I think so, too. I think they've gone down this road, and they're not going to change it. And I think Kyle will improve. But it is an interesting question because the guy was a Pro Bowl guard. We discussed this earlier. Yes or no, when the Bears line up, in 2016, is Shea McClellan a starting inside linebacker?
Starting?
I already answered this question because I don't think they should bring him back.
I think he's on the roster
to start next year.
Not. I don't think he's starting.
I don't think he's starting.
I don't think he's starting, but I think he may be on the roster.
Okay. So you're basically saying he's going to be a backup special teamer next year, a backup defensive player, one of your key special teamers.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's an early question because you got to see what the draft hasn't happened. I mean, there's a lot of things to go through. But yes, I think they bring him back.
Okay. I think it's time to move on. I don't know if they bring him back or not, but I think it's time to move on. Do you think Antrell Roll will be back?
Good question. No guarantee money anymore. Told Pat Finley in the locker room the other night that he wants to continue playing. He thinks he'll be healthy, but everybody says that, right?
Yeah.
You know,
that's the kind of guy you wonder how many job offers are going to be on the table.
Yeah.
If he hits free agency.
I mean, I think they missed him. And again, the Bears have no calorie cap concerns. So I think, you know, you just kind of, you know, you bring him back, have him compete. I don't know if you address it in free agency. You definitely address it in the draft in some means. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's done, but I don't think the Bears got what they wanted out of him this year.
No, no question. Terry Porter's play has slipped in recent weeks.
What, basketball player?
What do we do with him in the offseason? Why do so many people call him Terry?
The basketball player, wasn't he? Terry Porter?
Fine, but his name's Tracy Porter.
I know.
He's a free agent. I think he'll try to bring him back.
Yeah, 1-year deal. But again, I wouldn't...
He may have earned a multi-year deal, though, with his play this year.
You think? I know cornerbacks always get money thrown at him, right? You know, there's no age on it. But Charles Tillman... You know, only got a 1-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Carolina. Everybody's always looking to get younger, but everybody's always willing to spend on cornerbacks. I would say, you know, if I'm the Bears, I try to bring him back on a 1-year deal full of incentives.
Do you think Tayo Fabaluje will play right tackle next season? We sort of already said Kyle Long will be back at tackle, so.
Yeah.
Probably not, but it is interesting. What did they do with Fabaluje?
Can you move him inside?
Can he move inside? Is he any good? We have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, he's been gone for the past month because of his suspension.
He didn't look good in the preseason. Was he the one that had the hydration issues, or that was
no? No, he had those issues.
He had those issues too. He gets suspended, and despite all that, he's still on this team.
Yeah,
I mean, and this is with a regime that doesn't really put up with a bunch of crap.
Yeah,
they cut you. So,
but it's not like he was doing drugs. It was like a hunger suppressant, wasn't it?
Well, look, maybe it was. I tend to ignore whatever excuses that get thrown out there when there's drug test failed.
When who else got suspended? Eagle Ferguson, was it? Wasn't he suspended?
Yeah.
You know, he didn't make a statement. Tyo Fabaluje went to the PR department and said, I got to clear this up right away. Yeah. I give him credit for that.
But, again, can you 100% believe him?
Yeah, why not? He's giving me no reason not to believe him.
A lot of these guys always... I have yet to... Has there ever been...
What has Tyo Fabaluje done to you?
I'm not calling him out and saying he's a liar, but I'm also saying, have you ever met an NFL player who's been suspended for substance abuse that has come out and said, yeah, I was using PEDs?
No.
Right.
No.
They always deny it. Everyone denies it, which means it's hard to believe.
But not all of them give statements almost immediately.
And not all of them are lying. I'm just saying, it's like steroids in baseball. If you get dinged,
let's put on the record, Tyo Fabaluje is a liar, according to Adam Hoke.
All right, we have time for one more. The Bears' cap seems pretty clean, but do you see any likely cuts to free agent space this offseason, namely Jermon Bushrod and Martellus Bennett?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think safe to say, well Bushrod, yeah, you know,
I think
such Bushrod's
probably gone.
Yeah. I mean, they'll free up more space. They'll have plenty of room. Do they have to make those moves? Probably not, but it's what they want to do. And I think, yeah, I think we all know where the Martellus Bennett thing is going, right? We all see that going.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. So those are two guys right there that probably be gone. And both of their guaranteed money's done, right, for both of those guys?
Even if... Some minor bonus money.
Yeah.
But think about it. Were you there in the Walter Payton Center when Phil Emery and Mark Trestman introduced those two guys, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, that was their splurge in free agency.
You know, free agency rarely works out.
Yeah, you gotta, yeah.
Who was the guy everyone wanted this offseason for the Bears? Jarius Byrd.
Yeah.
Right? Or was that 2 years ago?
2 years ago. T.J. Ward. Remember the two safeties?
I'm sorry. That was 2 years ago. Everyone wanted one of those safeties.
Look at Sue.
Yeah.
Talking to a guy, one of the best in his position, who completely didn't play up to what they paid for down in Miami. I mean.
And look, there's some human nature involved here, too. This is a hard game to play.
Yeah.
I have a tremendous amount of respect for NFL players and what they put their body through. And when they get their money... I don't blame them if they're thinking about the future and just securing their health as much as possible, which is, you know, hard to do. To see the play tail off a little bit after getting your deal, whether it's intentional or not, I think part of that is human nature.
Yeah. I mean, you improve. You make yourself a healthy organization through the draft. Let's just be clear. I mean, look at Brian Pace's best signings. All 1 year guys, right?
Yeah.
Some of his... Is three big signings, Pernell McPhee, a home run, but he's been hurt. Enter Roll, hurt. Eddie Royal, hurt.
It's just, it happens. You going to go see concussion?
No. You know what? When we talked to George McCaskey, and he said, you know, he was talking to his wife whether or not this was a DVD movie.
Yeah.
I believe in that principle. You know, maybe I'm not an owner of an NFL team. I do cover it, the league, so I think I will see it eventually. But I believe there are DVD movies and movies to see in the theater. And
I agree
this
too.
Isn't exactly Avengers or the Star Wars. Those are movies, the Jurassic World. Those you see in the theater. The Batman Superman movie coming out. You see that in the theater.
Yeah.
Concussion, Will Smith portraying a doctor. Intriguing to me because I'm a football writer. But I've seen the documentaries. I've seen a dozen football documentaries on concussions.
Yeah.
You know?
But, well, and that's the thing. It's not really different than League of Nations. I saw it last week.
Right.
But I was invited to a screening.
Yeah, I mean, I just got two more of those today. You know,
so, I went and saw it. I liked it. I thought it was a decent movie. Not the greatest movie I've ever seen. A good movie, though. Will Smith was pretty
good.
But
did you learn anything that you didn't know?
No, everything that's in League of Denial is in this movie.
Yep.
But it's just... It's just a little bit more emotional, a little bit more impactful.
It's a movie.
Because it's a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And there were some truths, I guess, stretched here and there, but nothing that changes the underlying message of the movie, which we all know, that it's not just concussions. It's these subconcussive hits that add up over time
yeah.
for these football players. And I recommend going to see the movie. Okay, Adam? Get your ass off your couch.
I'll wait till it's in Redbox.
Redbox. Wow. No respect. What did Pernell McPhee say? I go see it because it's Will Smith.
You go to Hector, man. You know?
I get a concussion on every play.
Yeah, you did say that.
It's kind of true, actually. Wonder how many of those guys actually
It's football, though. People know what... I think these guys are well aware of what they sign up for. I think it's reached that point.
All right, we got to get out of here. Went a little bit long today, but a lot of good discussion as we kind of aim things towards the off season, and we'll have plenty more questions as we go into this thing. We'll see how many answers we get in the next couple weeks. I don't know if there's going to be many, but I agree with you, a guy like John Timu, get him out there,
let him play.
Will Shane McClellan play? Speaking of concussions
no, probably
he's had
not.
A few of them. Gotta get out of here. Thank you for listening, episode 21 of Intentional Grounding. Adam Hogue, Adam Johns. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, at Adam Johns. Find us at WGNRadio.com/Bears, ChicagoSunTimes.com. By the way, all that stuff I talked about at the beginning of the podcast about the draft order, I wrote about it today, so you can find that there. And we're on iTunes, SoundCloud. Producer's Mike Jacobson. Talk to everybody next week.